like to welcome everyone to the Early Mayor and Council meeting Monday, July 27th, 2020. And has been our tradition for many, many years, like to begin the meeting with reciting the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thy is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Please join in the pledge of
allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our first item on tonight's agenda is the approval of the minutes of the regular session of July 13th, which I believe set a new record as our shortest in 150 years.
It was relatively easy to proofread. With that being said, motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the regular session minutes of July 13th, Mayor and Council, by Councilman Coyas. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. The record shows that motion passed unanimously. Jeff, is Mr. Pichero?
First on the agenda, Mayor, is the special head request for.
Oh, okay.
For Adrian Bowen.
Okay, we'll do that.
He's on his way up as we speak.
There we go. Well, then he gets up. Okay. Fine. And so everyone knows what we're item on. This is item two. It's a special event application for a Berlin Unity celebration on Saturday, August 8th at Henry Park from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. And representing the sponsoring organization, which is the African American Coalition of Worcester County, is Adrian Bowen, okay. And also Teron,
yes.
Teron Whaley, and Ms. Meacham.
Nice to meet you.
Okay, what's the take the lead here? Just explain a little bit about your event, what to do, and what obviously precautions you're taking given the current COVID-19 pandemic.
So we'll start with the precautions we're taking each entry point at the park. There's two, one by adjacent to each fence to the apartments right there. We're going to have sanitizing stations. We're going to include hand sanitizer, disinfecting wipes. We have temperature guns. We're going to have it on each one of the entry points also. And I advise everybody through social media and word of mouth when you come across it. If they've had a call for a fever within the last 7 to 10 days, to go ahead and support the event by spreading the word for everybody to come out instead of actually coming out on physically to the event and whatnot. We also have the semi-pro football team from Salisbury, Eastern Shore Element. They're going to be there volunteering, spraying down all the things that we use for the activities for the kids, bean bags, comb. They're going to be going around spontaneously, spraying that stuff, keeping it sanitized and whatnot. We're going to encourage everybody to make sure they wear masks if they come out to the event. It's also still practice social distancing the best they can while being in the event, taking part in the activities and whatnot. Our main focus for having the event, of course, is to raise awareness about things that are going on currently when it comes to the community here in Berlin. There's a lot of things that have happened here at home in Berlin, amidst everything that's going on, I guess we say nationwide or whatnot, that a lot of people aren't as aware about, and the ones that are aware, sometimes are misinformed, and some of that can get channeled into the negative things instead of just doing things that are positive to help, I guess, better the outcome. We also have a lot of resources here. The food banks that go on the Marshall Building, the Marshall Churches here that actually have food banks that a lot of people don't know about. So as far as other stuff, be it community, Ulster County Health Department, see if they can come up there and just also help bridge a gap to resources as far as like health insurance, mental health evaluations, all this stuff is free. You know, they just write, go there. I know Via Kenia write a, what is it? They'll write, they basically give you a slip. Within the next 48 hours, you can actually go, and it's free. You can get those services provided to you. And a lot of people I feel like they don't get the necessary help when they're sick or when they're hurt because they don't have it. Right. Yeah. They don't know about it. They don't know about the services. So that's the main cause for the event, to try to bring the community, I guess, closer together. It's like something positive, you know. A lot of things have been going on. I feel like people are on the edge. We don't have a lot of huge events that take place, especially in downtown Berlin, quote unquote. So I think it's something good to have for the community.
Very good, very good. And this is something where really didn't sit. Folks who maybe have needs that don't know where to turn can come and very likely to find the resources or get referrals to the resources.
Correct.
And agencies that can help them.
Correct. And then also, I also forgot, we want to recognize three individuals, you know, within our community who have done a lot. We tried to focus on, so it was easy to find, you know, three people in education, three people in business. So we try to focus on, like, a person in education, a person in business, and a person who does a lot of, as far as community outreach. And we wanted to, a lot of times we don't recognize people until they're gone. So we want to try to, like, bridge that gap and give them some while they're still here. With that being said, one of the people that we want to recognize is Ms. Connie Sturgis, who has passed away. Mr. June Smith and Smith Taxi. You know, I know Bone, that's one of the first businesses that I've seen. And also Mr. Burnell Fisher. He had a community outreach basketball program for about three or four summers. And he funded picking the kids up about making sure their homework was done, checking on their GPAs. He did it for 3 or 4 years just off of his income. You know, he's also a father, so I know it's difficult for him having two little ones. But he did that, so those are the three individuals that we really wanted to, I guess, recognize.
And I can all say is that this is Connie Sturgis, or Miss Connie Sturgis, and knew her, had privilege of knowing her for a couple of decades, and she was just this kind-hearted and determined lady, and she'll ever know. She helped people throughout the world.
She was awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. Very good. Thank you.
Good school teacher.
It's on my mother.
Good. No, that's great. Does anyone have any questions for either gentleman, Mr. Boyle, or Mr. Mellon?
Are you going to have resources there, like maybe people from the food bank or people from, I don't know, insurance companies, something like that that you were describing?
Well, I know we have one representative from Pentecostal Baptist Church who has a food bank, Ms. Marie Ann, and she's going to be there. I haven't gotten contact with the food bank. I think there's one. Maybe one yesterday or day three yesterday. I don't know who to exactly reach out to. I know my mother has spoken to her about that. But I spoke to her directly. Yeah, I have spoken to Krista Lawrence, who is the program director, housing program director at DA Community. I reached out to her. And she not only wants to have, I guess, resources there and information there about their program, but they also have a veteran program that's attached to DA Community, the SSVF program. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of veterans who aren't working, even before the pandemic, were out of work for various reasons. So now that, like, when it comes to getting their benefits, it's even more difficult. So we do plan on having those people actually on site, you know, with forms and with information. Again, trying to just help bridge that gap if I don't even know about the resources that are available to me.
Is in the publicity that goes out about this, and in mm-hmm. our official minutes, is there a number, phone number, a website, or anything where people can reach out and contact you folks if they do have a service that would be helpful and they'd like to participate?
As far as us, African American West County Coalition, we can reach out to, you can get a hold of us through Facebook. As far as like the other, I guess, other people who can be a part of it, like Pentecostal Baptist Church, DA Kenia, I'm sure if I reach out to them and ask them, not only can you post information on our Facebook page, they have individual Facebook pages also that you can reach out to and call those individuals.
As much as the internet is being used for all kinds of good things as well as everything else, Facebook idea is great. I'm just suggesting that you have names that people ask for, a number they can call, a website, whatever, email address or something, or a website that's available. So so that everybody can come together that has the means and ability to do so.
Yeah. Everything's going to be free. There's no money exchanged for anything
right,
there.
No. Okay. Well, we at first, I guess, went over the idea of having people there, but then as we spoke and got information about as far as not being able to do that kind of stuff because it is a public fund department. No.
So no vendors?
No, nothing happened.
I won't have an announcement light up this year.
No, that's been canceled.
That has been canceled. Why?
The letter from the chief reads, the Berman Police Department has canceled National Night Out for 2020 due to several concerns. The department has started discussions with community partners about working on several smaller community engagements and outreaches. Ideas include back-to-school drive-through, in late August, a senior cookout in the fall, and a community give-back during the Thanksgiving season.
If I may, the national organization actually strongly recommended that all communities postpone.
This sounds just like what happened at National Night Out. You all have been to the park. You all have been to the park and participated in National Night Out. And although I believe that your intent is commendable, and it does me good to see two young black men of my community with the fortitude and the intention of putting on such a marvelous event, I just feel the time is out of joint. You're asking us to support a non-essential gathering of our citizens. And with this pandemic going on, and I hear what you say about the sanitizing stations and that kind of stuff, that's a good thing. But I just believe that the time is not right for a gathering of this nature. You talked about having games for children and other activities that's going to bring people close together and bring people in close proximity to each other. Despite your intentions of social distancing, I think that would be really hard to control. And although my heart is with this event, I can't support it at this time. And I think that would be in the best interest of our community is to not have this event at this time.
Can I ask you, is it possible, because we made the decision back in May to not have any activities through Labor Day, in terms of town-sponsored or town-approved events, and I think that still holds well, and I think, given what little we had, I don't regret that decision at all. However, the schools are beginning to open, and I think that there will be a few events, selected events based on what organizations want to continue, others don't. It's everybody's choice. But is there any possibility that you could schedule this with the same intent and purpose after Labor Day? Not Labor Day weekend. After Labor Day, we figure it's tourist season, and God bless them. But after Labor Day, it becomes more of the season for our small town community.
There used to be an event in the town called a fall festival. You all probably too young to remember the fall festival. Would you consider trying to have your event later on, like in the early fall?
Right, in the September, October.
Mm-hmm. October, middle of October, something like that. Before it gets cold, you know, before people go in for it because it's too cold. But I would just like to give this pandemic thing a little more time to work itself out.
I think we definitely would consider early fall.
Yeah. What we had planned as of right now was because of, you know, the timing of everything. And we wanted to bring the community together for that certain reason. Because of everything that's going around in the world. We wanted to bring positive to the negative. And we also want to do it at this time because of the weather. Now, we have talked about it, and we would like to push it back. If we have to, we will push it back. But we wanted to do it right now because later on in the fall, as you go along, that's when the weather starts getting fun.
That's our peak season for events. To say the spring and fall, not the summer. We have usually one, maybe two sanctioned events that we approve throughout 3 months of summer. But everything else, and we have dozens of events, are in the spring and up until early June, and then again beginning after Labor Day. And not all of them this fall are going to happen, but that's when folks here, partly the heat, but it's also partly folks, at least in this area, almost everybody makes a lot of their income in the summer months. So you kind of step back, let people meet their needs for their families and loved ones. And then in the fall, we get together and have multiple events. I like Councilman Burrell's suggestion because I think it actually will be more successful. I think it's going to take time for people to gain the confidence and gain the comfort level to mingle again, even with social distancing. And I honestly think that for other events and for your proposed event, after Labor Day is a beautiful time. I mean, basically from September, October, and early November. But you know, you choose the time that works best for you. But I think that's a positive. That's a positive. Because why have people, and I think it's only fair, a number of people, and I can't tell you the percentage, are still either intimidated or afraid to be in larger groups. And that's why we said nothing until after Labor Day. And so if you would consider that, I think you would have, obviously, I think you'd have the county votes for their cast, but I think you'd have a majority of the council supporting you, and I think you'd have more of the community participating. That's just my opinion, and I'm happy to share it with you because I believe that we've taken the middle road here. Town of Berlin has been cautious, but we haven't been extreme. And I think our cautious approach, given our proximity to a major resort, given the fact that we have lots of people traveling north, south, and east, west, in and near our community, so far, knock on wood, I think we've taken an appropriate course, and I think that our plans for the fall follow those lines. So I'd ask you if you all would consider asking for permission and then coming back later with a specific date, because then you can get comments from the council and you can get a feel, because my impression is you've got a really good idea here. It's just a matter of time.
I feel the same way. And right now, you've got a few months to plan. So it's not like you got, you know, go and rush. But you want to pick your date because the dates start moving in the fall. So now is a good time to pick the date, and then you can come back and resubmit this. If you're comfortable with that.
And we really would like for you to consider changing the date, because the event you all have planned, I think, is a good event. Mm-hmm. And it's one that is needed, and I think it's one that could go over really well. But the time, and it's just
resources that are a need right now and present. And I think it would be smart to try and find a way that we can still help you push those resources to the people that need them and raise awareness. And that's probably best done right now through social media. So if you do something like that, I think all of us would help try and get that message out, because there are people that really need it right now. So thank you.
And I'll even help you. I am the printing company in town. I'll help you with posters, designing some posters, some yard signs and stuff. I'll donate that to you guys to help get that word out, because I believe in what you're doing. I think you need it. And since you guys live here, you know the community as well, I think it's a great thing what you want to do. I tend to agree with Councilman Burrell. I certainly seem to get hurt and sick or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's all. And it stinks, because I know you guys, your heart's in the right place. You want to do this. I agree with everything that you're doing. But if you would consider moving that back, either way, I'll still help you. It doesn't matter.
To give option, if you think that's something we're working on, personally, as mayor, strongly endorse what Councilman Burrell and the other council members said. If you voluntarily do that, to set the date back, then what we can do is say, we approve the event and concept, and then when you pick a date, you just come back at that time, have the paperwork fill out, and we can move forward. And that way you can start promoting the event, rather than holding everything in limbo. I don't want to hold you up like that. But I suggest that if you want to do that, we can approve the concept of the event, what its purpose is for, the location, and the date and time would then be set at a later time, once you know what that is, as long as it's after the event. Okay.
Yeah,
so
you
better work.
Yeah, we can
do that. Okay. Great. So are we all clear?
Thank you
so much, and you know, keep on trucking here. and you know, you've got a great start, but and use this time to your advantage. Sometimes what looks like a hurdle can actually be a benefit, and I think that's the situation. So good luck. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Keep doing good things.
Good to see you, bro.
Item 3 on the agenda, and this is a presentation by our Gully Fire Company, David Fitzgerald, who provides us for the last year or so with a quarterly report. Thank you, David. All
right, good evening, Mayor and Council. Usually I'm joined by the Fire Chief, Brian Trumbull, and the EMS Captain, John Holloway, but due to the COVID requirements, I'm going to present the entire report. If there's questions that I can't answer, that's operationally, we'll have those two reply back, and we'll send something to Mr. Fleetwood and staff in writing. So our quarterly report, which would be the April 1st to June 30th, and I'm on the red one for the fire calls. We start with that one first. So 25 fire calls in town, 29.76% of the calls in town. If you see, that's a lower number than usual with COVID-19. We're finding that people are just, they're not having the accidents here in town or anywhere because the travel was restricted. There's other things that have made our calls and nationwide the calls go down. So the busiest times, days were Saturday followed by Sundays and Mondays. Still the busiest time of the day seems to be in the afternoons, 2 to 3 o'clock, and then slightly before that, 12 to 1. Our response times, this new reporting system shows from the time we're alerted to time on a scene, 9.1 minutes. The county has a response criteria of 6 minutes for us to respond, and the matrix report we're within those guidelines. Actually, they have 9 minutes to respond, and we're getting on the scene in 9 minutes. So next is the budgetary highlights for the fiscal year that concluded June 30th, and these are, you know, still unaudited numbers. We'll close out our books with Mr. Berge, and then they'll be forwarded on to PKS for further audit. The revenue down slightly in donation drive, and our fundraisers were up just slightly prior to our closures due to rentals. As you, I think you recall, we had the ice rink scheduled the week before COVID-19 restrictions went in place, so the ice rink actually stayed upstairs till just a few weeks ago when the county came and got it. So we want to plan that again if the restrictions are lifted sometime this winter. The expense highlights, I had mentioned before in the last quarterly report, we had a gear washer that was unexpected repair, and that's to wash the fire gear that the members wear, and that's a requirement. They can't have the carcinogens on their gear. It needs to be cleaned before they wear it the next time or put it in their vehicle or store it. And we did close out the year with our vehicle maintenance repair was $10,000 over because we had some pump and valve replacements on one of our engines. But overall, we were the other budget items were not remarkable. The storage building improvements stayed on schedule. A couple things had to be carried over because the contractors wouldn't come in the building, in the storage building, due to the COVID-19 restrictions. On the back page, I did two-sided on yours. Just an update on the 2021 budget, both the county, the fire company budget, and the town. We still need to plan on this future funding. Within about 3 years, we're looking at $300,000 worth of air pack replacements. That's the breathing air. We are eligible to get some grant funds from that, but the remaining we've got to plan for. These need to be purchased all at one time. Speaking with our operational officers, you don't want to buy 10 this week or this month or this year, and they'd be model 1.0. Then you wait a year, and the next you got model 1.2, and you're in a fire, and you're trying to remember, is this model 1? Is this model 2? Where's my buttons? So, you know, most operationally, you budget for and replace all these at one time for the safety and operations, consistent operations. Just a reminder that, you know, the town cuts do affect other things, especially our state aid fund that had just, that's the money we get. People call it the Senator Amos, A-M-O-S-S, 508 funds. That's based on formula from the county and town grants. So when those go down, this goes down. It takes another fiscal year for that to catch up. So that's going to be a hit we're going to take next year from that. So our 508 funds will most likely go down. And then we'll update you the first quarter of the effects of the budget cuts. We're still evaluating those. It's been just like yourself. It's hard to meet and get people together with the COVID-19 restrictions.
David, I do have a question. The breathing apparatus, is there a way that the county, I assume that the other departments are facing a similar issue, right, across the county?
Not necessarily, because theirs may be of different age. We piggyback off when we purchase, and we use a Scott brand. We purchase off a large contract, either the Houston Galveston contract, HGAC, or something like that. It's a big contract that's purchased, and we're allowed to piggyback off those being a nonprofit fire company. So, but in the county, may not be likely that we're all due at the same time. Just depends when somebody else replaced theirs.
How big of a change has there been from the model that you have versus, because that's pretty standard across the county right now, the model that you have, correct?
I believe, and I may have to verify with the fire chief because I don't stay knee-deep in the operations, but to my knowledge, Scott air packs are used mostly all through this entire region.
Has there been a big change in the model from the ones that you're looking at?
Well, we have some that are quite old, yes, the safety mechanisms, and getting replacement parts. I know even last year when they did our annual maintenance, they cautioned us that when they come in this year, there may be certain parts that they can't get. So these aren't something that are 1 or 2 years old. We're talking, you know, 10 years old.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So the blue sheet of paper, which is the EMS, the calls for the last quarter of the year, 170 in-town calls, 51.5% of the calls in-town. Transport's 116, non-transport's 54. Our busiest days for the EMS are Saturday, followed by Tuesday and Thursday. And then our busy times are 12 noon to 1, and again from 7 to 9 in the evening. The response times average 1.46 minutes. The matrix report says 60 seconds staffed. It's just impossible for the 911 center to keep track of whether the ambulance is being staffed by the on-duty crew or you're waiting for a volunteer to come. But with the 1.46 average, that is certainly meeting the standard. The revenue budget highlights for the entire fiscal year. As we mentioned before, our donations were slightly less. Our annual donations ended up being a little more. Some came in that last quarter. And then we did see a good increase in our invoices than what we budgeted. And then our expense highlights. We mentioned before in a previous quarterly report about our medical supplies. We had some expired items and things need to be replaced. And then our payroll was slightly higher, and that's due to we have employees that are having children and have changed plans, and we do the same as a town. We split a 90%, 10% for individual, and 70-30 for dependents. So when somebody changes or has kids, and we actually had one of our providers had twins, so that put two kids on, boom, right away. That has our, when we say payroll, that's the benefits and everything. So that was slightly higher. Our fuel was just slightly higher. Our crew incentives was less, so that helped balance out some of those higher expenditures because COVID-19, new volunteers just, as we've talked to before, EMS is definitely not a volunteer interest across the nation. And then when you put COVID-19 on top of it, you really don't have volunteers want to come because they can't take a chance on getting infected or being infected and then being quarantined or restricted from their duties to affect their paying job. The other mentioned is the new ambulance. That's all in service since we last met. We did have to get a $100,000 loan, so we have a local loan for that. We're paying that back using the county allocation that they provide for ambulances. For the 2021 budget, we still need to look at working with the town for the capital replacement of ambulances because it's currently all being funded through the county allocation. Again, I mentioned about the grant. EMS Captain Holloway's explained to you before about a cost savings plan that we have, and we'll be able to use rehabbed ambulances, which means taking the back part where the patient is transported, and instead of that being new, it would go back to the factory and just be rejuvenated, any safety things installed, make sure the electrical is good, and just be put on a new truck body, if you'll call that, a new Ford front part, so the engine and what's got the mileage and transmission, the motor, would be new. So that, as he said, that would be a substantial cost savings. Some of the things that we had to do immediately to balance the budget due to the cuts is there is no longer four people at the firehouse. There's not a second crew. So there is only three people at the station. So any second call now, you have to wait for the volunteers or be maybe waiting for another response from outside agencies if no volunteers are available. That also affects the fire truck response because, again, there's not four people there. And we'll have to continue to monitor the budget as we go through quarter by quarter to see where we are in revenue expenses, and the next cut would have to be no backfilling of personnel. So when somebody is out on sick leave or vacation, that third person may not even be there. We would be down to just the minimum staffing of two people. And, of course, what the results of that could be delayed response time and waiting for other companies to come in to cover those calls. But we will have two people there. There will be one ambulance staffed at all times. There's sufficient funds for that. We triple and double check that. Just you will not have the staffing that the town and the county has had for many years with the fire company and EMS.
Thank you very much for that information. I like to say, because that is very helpful. Just one reminder, again, because of COVID-19, it kind of had to be suspended. But we're still looking forward to working, having you, other officers of the department, work closely with Town of Berwick, Town of Ocean City, Town of Snowville, Town of Pocono, and the Ocean Pines Association, and sitting down and working with the county, creating whatever they want to do, creating a task force, whatever, because this emergency services dilemma is not exclusively a Berlin situation. It is something where every town's having handled this differently. As Ocean City got a nice appropriate additional supplemental income from the county for providing services to West Ocean City. But based on what's happening throughout many other regions of the Eastern Shore and the Atlantic, we feel that a coordinated effort between county and the towns is an absolute must, or things are only going to get tougher and tougher and tougher. And there has to be a fair, and there can be, I think the fact that for many reasons the county has basically shied away from that, just wrote a check, here's your check now, don't bother us, that can't continue. And in the fall, COVID is hopefully less rabid and we can get people together more easily. I would again extend the invitation that we did the last time you and I spoke, that we have the Berlin Fire Company joining with the town and with these other towns and other firefighters to talk to the county about to look seriously at a coordinated EMS service for everywhere outside of Ocean City, West Ocean. Ocean City is a unique situation. It is unlike any town, other town, or Worcester County. This also, I think, would be very helpful to the smaller, non-incorporated towns throughout our county. It's time. The system we've had is developed over many years. The system before that became obsolete. Now I think we've reached a point where we all want to work together, and it's everybody doing their own thing. It's just not financially sustainable. And it has nothing to do about personnel. It has nothing to do with personalities, anything. We would love to see more EMS coverage. But it has to be done in a way in which all the assets, both equipment assets, personnel, and the personnel that are needed, are all done working in unison. It's just, it's time, it's the 21st century, we've got to get into it. We want to be very supportive, but the fact that, the funding formula for the county even, but the funding after that is all in place. We think it's time to have a coordinated system of EMS throughout this county, with the exclusion of West Ocean City and Ocean City, which has their own challenges and solutions. So I just want to extend that invitation to you again, and hope that you pass it on to all the other officers and members of the Berlin Fire Company and see if we can get started again in the fall. I don't know the exact time because, like everyone else, we're trying to see how this pandemic pans out.
Yeah, I think the county has planned to do some sort of additional planning. One of the things that we'd like to offer to the town as well, we're not included, the fire or EMS, in any of the town's planning processes, and we've asked before. We always get plans and what have you from the county when there's subdivisions, and let us provide you so you see the impact, because I know you do it for water and sewer. You look at the EDUs and how much water and sewer, but the fire and EMS aren't included to tell you what that impact's going to be. When you take an empty field and build 702 apartments, we can probably tell you about how many, based on age, how many EMS calls that's going to generate, how many fire calls. Yes, the place may be sprinklered and comments are made, oh, it's not going to burn down, but we go to some of these places for many elevator rescues and other things. So that would, I think, help you as the mayor and council, planning commissions, see the impact what happens when you take an empty lot and develop it. So I think that would help you all.
We totally agree. We have no objection to that. But we think rather than this piecemeal, we take this multifaceted challenge, pull it all together, and I think that's one of the things we certainly can work out at our level, at the town level. But again, I think it's got some multifaceted problems. There's a lot of moving parts. And the fact that we have these individual volunteer fire companies trying to provide EMS services at all different scales and all kinds of levels of need, and quite frankly, it's a system that has outlasted its time, and we're moving forward in so many other ways. I know that we all expect there might be a temporary slowdown in growth, but I don't think it's a permanent one. If anything, I'm very grateful for the continued growth that's happening in this town and in our immediate area. And I think once all this passes, we'll be back, not overnight, but in a reasonable time, we'll be in high gear. And by that time, we need to have all this resolved. And I'm looking forward to this working together.
Okay.
Thank
you.
How are your members and the employees holding up right now during the pandemic?
I would say they're holding up well. It's a challenge, just like your organization here, any organization. If you belong to a civic organization, you're used to being together, and you're not together. And I do feel that that does not bring camaraderie when you're not together. As far as the responses, I think they're holding up well. We've been very fortunate that we have had no one in our employment or our volunteers ill due to COVID-19, and that is applauding them and us in ensure that we are taking those precautions with personal protective equipment and that type of thing. But I will tell you, it's concerning. We have members that do not come up because they have underlying health conditions, and that could be all sorts of ages that just cannot come up to the firehouse and expose themselves to that risk, as well as others that can't do it because of their jobs and taking something home to their family. So I think that Councilmember Trimble, they're holding up well, but it is concerning and troubling.
Are you still okay on PPE?
We are. We were very fortunate. We had stockpiled, if you will, from the Ebola. So we still had suits and what have you that were still in date. We do get some support from the county, which gets it from the state. It's not a lot, but we have been very fortunate because we planned ahead and had a stockpile, and our EMS lieutenant who handles supplies, EMS captain, stays ahead of the ordering. So we've been very fortunate that we've had supplies and good supplies. We actually invested in some nice protective suits for our volunteers and our career staff.
Thank you.
David, just hearing about talking about grants and awards, have you applied for any grants and awards available right now to nonprofit or SBA small loans or state of Maryland?
Well, we are allowed to apply to FEMA for public assistance. If we reach a certain threshold, yes, we will apply for those expenses, and we apply for the assistant firefighter grant and those things that are available to us. Well, ask Mr. Berger to look into it.
And I mean, one interesting thing that I did find out, and I passed something along to you, mm-hmm. and I didn't know that was strictly carved out for a certain reason, and if you didn't pass a threshold, could you elaborate on that?
Well, like the FEMA Part B, which is the Emergency Protective Actions, if you don't expend $3,300, you can't apply for a project. So all these have little caveats that you have to read the fine print. It's just like the CARES funding that is sent. If you read the literature right now and the guidance from lawyers like Paige Worth, who are big EMS, there's no guidance. So they send you a little money, or it's automatic deposit. It shows up, and you don't realize it until the CPA goes to balance your account. But then there's no guidance on how to spend that. So the guidance now from the attorneys is you need to put that in an account until you see what that can be spent for. If that's supposed to be your personal protective equipment reimbursement, then that would make us ineligible to apply for FEMA B because you can't double dip. So there's a lot of moving parts with this CARES and all sorts of things. So, but the health department, you know, is manages the local CARES money. So if we need some of that, like finance director said, you know, we speak to those people routinely.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on our agenda is item 4, which is a discussion on the draft reserve policy, or establishing one for the town of Berlin. And leading off the discussion here will be town administrator Jeff Lee.
Good evening. What I want to try to do is to take you guys on a trip. And this first document I'm giving you, it has ways and means of it. I want everyone to have an understanding. First of all, where is all the money? If you take a look at this, this is probably the current, and this is the balances as of the end of the last fiscal year. And if you take a look, I call them buckets of money. You all can read, but from left to right, non-spendable monies from other funds, $3.4 million, restricted from slots, about $4,000, committed impact fees, a little over $900,000, assigned monies, $791,000, and it breaks it down, $376,000 for healthcare, and $415,000 that's been assigned to the fund for the community center.
General fund.
All general funds, correct. Okay?
$9.1 is committed. What are they committed to?
Their impact fees.
I know, but they're not committed to anything this time, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Okay. So, that was an eye-opener to me. Natalie and I had a discussion, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 months ago. I asked the question, where's all the money? But you broke it down into buckets. I like pictures, so it made it kind of easy for me.
Jeff, can I just clarify one thing?
Yeah.
Committed impact fees.
Yeah.
They're committed in the sense that they have to be used for appropriate purposes.
Correct.
They can't just be shuffled into the general fund to become part of the overall budget. I just wanted to clarify that.
And I've had conversations.
That's called a not readily available.
Right.
I've had more than one conversation regarding that fund with the counselor, so and given me fairly clear marching orders.
And just in case someone is not familiar, impact fees were established here many years ago so that we have income that can then be used to offset impacts from growth and development. And that's what they're used for. Sometimes it's in the immediate area, and sometimes it's in the general growth of the town of Berlin. So at least everybody knows that, yes, there are money set aside for those things, and when we need them, they're usually big buck items. So, and that's something we need to do from time to time. I suspect in the next year or two, we're going to have some significant needs for impact fees because of the developments and growth that we have experienced and have been approved, and that's what they're for.
Well, a great example of that is Broad Street sidewalk. We used that money to build that down there after we had all the dollars on that side then.
So to uncommit, it would go in front of you for a decision.
Yeah, that's great. It doesn't happen all that.
Okay.
So the next document I laid out in front of you, again, this is for discussion. This is a draft, okay, resolution 2020-ish, whatever the number will be, but titled the resolution of the Mayor and Council of the Town of Berlin establishing a general fund reserve policy. And I'm not going to read all the preludes, I want to call it, but I want to drop down on the first page to where it says revenues established. Can we, when I say we, Natalie and I, have bounced our heads together, trying to come up with a starting point is what I want to call it. So if you go
go down to where it says reserves established, it reads the town shall maintain minimum fund balances according to the requirements set forth in the section. Restricted fund balances shall be maintained as required by grantors, bondholders, and higher levels of government. Committed fund balances shall be maintained as follows. I think this is the meat. There shall be an employee health care reserve in the amount of not less than $300,000 to mitigate the increase in employee health costs.
Now you can go down. Can you say what's new as it relates to this? It's all new, right?
No.
So then what's not new, can you tell us it isn't?
Yes.
That's right.
Okay. So the health care reserve that's been in place how many years?
I want to say 20 or more, the way before my time.
But that's currently in a budgeted item, or it's on paper, but it's just not in our reserve snapshot, right? Am I correct about this?
The reserves are not on the budget.
Right.
We don't post reserve balances.
But what I'm saying is that in here, rather, if this were to be adopted, we would then see this amount show up in this graphical representation of this isn't just reserved, this is just...
That's right.
I'm sorry. Okay. I spoke out of turn.
And I'm going to jump out of turn, too. After we have a discussion regarding this, I'm going to give you... I want to then step into the discussion about whether we're going to write off, forgive the monies from the sewer fund back to the general fund. Following that discussion, that flow chart that I gave you, I'm going to give you what it looks like proposed with what we're proposing with reserve policy.
And you can see it before that.
That's right. Okay. And I think that will answer your question.
Okay. I also like that.
How do you do it? Okay.
You were on number C.
We're on C. Unassigned fund balances shall consist of the balance of all amounts not otherwise expended, encumbered, or reserved. Reserve categories, again, I think this is the meat. The town shall transfer $100,000 a year from the unassigned fund balance to obtain minimum fund balances according to the requirements and in order set forth in this section. There shall be a budget stabilization reserve in the amount sufficient to ensure continuity of town general fund operations for a three-month period. Where do we come up with a three-month savings, if you will? That came, I do believe, from...
That's a fund practice advice.
Right.
Okay.
And that's through the, I think it's through the employee line of the PKS, not PKS, TFOA. Okay. Number two, there shall be a capital reserve in the amount of $100,000 to pay for unplanned but essential capital projects. Number three, there shall be a debt reduction reserve in the amount reasonably established by the town debt service, principal plus interest, and any outstanding long-term debt instruments for 1 year. Number four, there shall be disaster recovery reserve in the amount of $250,000 to pay the town's cost of emergency repairs to or replacements of parts of the town's infrastructure damaged by any natural or man-made disaster, or abate or prevent further damages to life or property.
Now, 2, 3, and 4.
Yep.
That's in addition to 1.
Correct.
So they're not included in 1.
They're all separate buckets. Okay.
So the first chart is basically where it says general fund balance, just one of, where it says current, and it has two big green squares and two yellow squares. That's what we currently have in place. With the policy as the guidelines, it's not necessarily we can achieve right at the moment, right today, and be here. It's something is to look forward and move forward to have as a proposed squares of yellow what we have and green would be something that the policy discussed right now. Jeff just read the paragraph 1, 2, 3, and 4. So if you just want to take a look and look at the proposed.
Jumping forward.
First I want you to define. Define for me. Non-spendable, restricted, committed, assigned.
Okay, so non-spendable amount, and we're looking at the current, it's the fund in
very simple way to explain that it's money we loan from the general fund to our one or more of our utility funds, that the utility funds then over time pay back to the general fund.
Correct.
And sometimes it's very little, sometimes it's a lot.
So that's non-spendable amount.
Non-spendable because
it's money we owe ourselves.
It's just accounting for it, but it's not money in the bank. It's money we owe ourselves, just like the mayor said.
You spoke one time, Councilmember Borrell, at a budget session, I remember, and you said you wanted to know about the new 2 months. And that's what it is.
That's what they used to be referred to as.
That's right.
So then we have basically restricted by somebody else outside of mayor and council. And that would only category fall into is the slots revenues, because they're basically restricted to a certain purpose and not readily kind of spendable on an everyday basis. So the slots revenues, as of right now today, we're assigning and restricting to the police safety, which is the police department.
To paying off the debt of the new police station, that's where all of our slot money goes each year, paying that down, and then approximately, I can't remember because we've done this for 2 or 3 years, in approximately 10 years, that debt will be totally paid down. Prior to that time, a year or two before, mayor and council that time will have to determine what they want to spend the slot revenues on, given the restrictions and guidelines that are dictated by the state.
Correct.
It's basically for public
so
safety.
It's basically restricted by the state.
Public safety.
Then we have committed impact fees, which we just talked about a minute ago. It's town, mayor and council committed for the impact of development of the community. So they're not committed at the moment. We're just setting them aside for a specific purpose. And then we have assigned monies, which could be spent by you just simply authorizing to spend them. And they are health insurance and community center as of today, what we have. And then everything else, what's left after in general fund, is unassigned fund balance.
And I want to add to the restricted slots, monies, those average, since we've been receiving those, approximately $25,000 a month. It's not that now with COVID, but we've averaged about $25,000 a month. Sorry?
Okay,
healthcare monies and the community center monies, they both are in an interest bearing account.
Okay. Now, I see that the one that's current, mm-hmm, has a $376,000 balance in healthcare. And then the proposed would reduce that amount to $300,000.
It's not necessarily to reduce, it's not to drop below $300,000. The policy reads not less than.
Okay.
So this specific account varies per se according to our HSA card usage. So it never drops below $300,000. But on a certain day, it could be 376, and then 350, 360. But as we go, replenish, make sure it's never below 300.
Okay. And then when we do the budget, can we get a document that shows a summary of this before we start entering into the discussions of department head requests and the utility fund? I think this is helpful information that would be nice to get early on. Is that something that could be done?
Sure.
And again, that would be the balance at that time, which again changes a month, and then we get projections pretty much about as well, the finance department thinks the final numbers will be. And they're usually pretty close, but I think it'll be, again, for everybody's benefit, better to understand all these breakdowns of these general fund balances, because it's not just one bottom line. It's all these requirements that are required by law and by fiscal prudence that we just have to do.
Okay, so just to clarify, numbers are not budgeted or budget numbers. There's two different things going on. Budget is, we're operating on the balanced budget, revenues minus expenses, we have to balance. If there is a negative amount that we have to cover, meaning approved expenses or introduced or adopted, is higher than receipted revenues, then we, in the past, advanced from reserve to cover major capital. This is something that's totally different and separate. That's our year-end closing balance of the general fund. So the snapshot is helpful, but it's not that we will put it on the budget or increase the budget or reduce the budget because of the reserve policy. I just want to make it clear.
Well, yes and no, because if, let's just say that healthcare came in at 250 after a fiscal year, and we're looking at a new budget, according to this policy that's being proposed, we would need to find $50,000 to replenish that fund, so that would be a budget issue. Am I right?
Right. Yes and no. The healthcare 300 that we're talking about reserve,
right,
is there for us to negotiate. What if it's way over double the price?
Right.
So we always have amount budgeted each year as we get. The 300 is in reserve in the account in case of emergency.
What happened a number of years ago, real quick? I think it goes back to around 2008 when Tony Carson was here. Your rates that you get on a health care quote, a majority of them are out of control. And what happened back in 2008, if I remember correctly from what I've, the time you share with me, what I've read, we were, I'm going to make these numbers up, the town was paying $450,000 a year for health insurance for the employees. That particular year, the increase that the town took for renewal, it was a double-digit figure, and it was 37 percent, if I remember. And that kind of threw things out of whack significantly, because you don't plan for a 30% increase. If you think back to the last 10 years, each year we've been very lucky. We budget for healthcare a 5% increase, and we've been very lucky. We've come in for 10 years, anywhere from 0% to 4%. But every year you get your fingers crossed. That 30% comes, what are we going to do?
And I realize what you're saying, but what I'm only using healthcare as an example. But what I'm saying is that if we enact a policy about reserves with these goals and benchmarks in place, when something gets below that level, we have an obligation by the policy that we adopt to refill that bucket. And what I'm asking is that if we have that information at the start of the budget, we know what that pot of money needs to be refilled at. And it helps us make good decisions, I think.
So would not that be a budget concern? To Zach's question?
It would be a budget concern if you decided to advance money from reserve and cover a specific expense and then project to replenish it. But if you have an established healthcare reserve as of today, and for so many years we've been fortunate not to advance from it, we'll always budget the amount that we need. But if we would see mentioned 30% or 40% increase, we would definitely go into the advance and from the reserve for the health care and then have a plan to replenish it later on.
Because another place, I mean, you could look on and on, but another place is like the state retirement system. If those actuarials come off, we could be in for another swing in a given year as well, right, Jeff?
All the reserves, including, and again, I understand your point here. The thing is that the healthcare reserve is something that at least is somewhat predictable, even if it can have to kick you once in a while. But the disaster recovery or some major piece of equipment, and then the utilities go down, we're not talking a few tenths of $1,000s. Usually we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars. And that's why that recovery fund has to have, well, we're proposing has to have at least $250,000. Just because when it's needed in a big way. And I think this is the thing, is what we're trying to do here is establish a policy where when things go bump in the night, we know we have the reserves on hand. And I think that's one of the things the community needs to understand is we're not broke, it's not that we don't have the money, but the monies we have are designated and obligated for a variety of situations so that come what may, that we can meet our obligations. And I think that's part where, you know, when we have to borrow reserves against the general fund, that's usually a temporary thing, and sometimes it's usually big, and then we pay it back over time, and that will be the next policy we'll discuss tonight.
And you think about the last few years, where have the major expenses happened? And I mean, I think 2 years ago we spent roughly $600,000 on two vehicles, a trash truck and a recycle truck. And where did that money come from? You get the budget board, obviously, but let's turn that around and let's say that today, I hope it doesn't happen. Tomorrow morning, the trash truck goes kaput and the recycling truck goes kaput. Where's that money going to come from? What?
The $16,000 unassigned spendable.
That's right, you better stretch it.
Yeah.
So, are these numbers going to happen overnight? The answer is no. Do we know that? But right now, do we have a plan?
You've got a disaster recovery of $250,000 you want to assign into an account and draw the capital reserve $100,000. You've got to find $350,000 somewhere in your budget. It's the only way you can do it.
Right.
And it's not, this is something that the guidelines as a goal to move forward.
That's a perfect scenario. To, we say, okay, we're committing to in the future assigning $350,000 of new money to go into account.
But it's not going to happen in this budget year or next budget year. It's something that we have to work towards that in the future as to help us to have those.
FY21, the number escapes me, but we put how much money in this FY21 budget do we put into reserves?
If
the budget year
the
ends.
If the utility comes close and as projected with no emergencies, we should have $150,000 back to general.
We have the budget we're currently operating under right now.
50.
And based on last year's numbers you've got so far, that's what we think you can do looking forward.
And that 150.
I remember whatever the discussion said, 150, but that goes to where?
We would assign that to one of this.
It goes to the unassigned spending.
Yep.
Okay.
Right, and then we can transfer and put it to one of the reserve buckets. We call the bucket squares.
Mm-hmm. Now,
we're talking 150,000 because everybody's using shorting. We're saying 150. Mm-hmm. We're not talking $150.
Oh no, I see.
I know, but we got to remember there's people that hopefully want to understand.
So then you would have a right either to commit it, assign, set it to the debt, set it to the healthcare community, add it to, or transfer. It would be in within Mayor Council powers.
Let me ask the question. Okay, there's a ways and means of this, and I feel pretty strongly about this. Yeah, you're committing something. That's fact. But let me ask you a question. I wasn't here when this happened. So most of you all were. You committed at some point 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whenever that was. You committed to having $300,000 in health care, and you committed to putting $415,000 for a community center. Why'd you do that?
Because we have the money on the sale.
Yeah, the sale for that, that's right. But you did it for, in all fairness, everybody in the room, we've sat before and discussed about needing money to do X, Y, Z, and the topic was thrown out there. It's there if you uncommit from this or this. And I know what I recollect was you weren't going to uncommit. You were fixed. That money's going to stay where it is. I think it was a sound decision. But I guess
what is the point of making decisions, planning, for anything if we're just uncommitted?
That's right.
Every time that something for the month and the night. It's no different than a family budget or a business operation. There are things you can predict and there are things you're not, but you don't stop planning for the future and investing in the future of the town just because life can happen.
But don't get me wrong, I'm all for establishing these in reserve. It's just I've got to think it's eyes wide open. It's going to cost money.
Yeah.
And we got to commit to down the road coming up with that money. Not just one OGV.
We need to start thinking about building our reserves stronger.
I think it's a great idea.
Yes.
It
and this is just a goal that we have to work slowly. I hope it will take us a couple of years. It might take us more than that. But whatever it takes us, and if we have to adjust something on the policy later on as we go, it's perfectly fine. But this is something just for discussion to see that it needs to be in place. It needs to be discussed and acknowledge that we need to move forward as a goal to that.
Now I think that this is a good attempt, but I also look at it as sometimes if we have to set achievable goals, I think. And I really think that if we were really good and in a decent financial position to be able to fill these different buckets that are recommended, it would be great. But we're not. And I think that the first thing that we should focus on is achieving that benchmark that the DFOA says, which is 3 months where I think 16% of your operating budget in reserve. And we don't have it. We have $16,000. So I think that this policy could be much more simplistic and act as a better guide by saying, hey, look, we want to see that level of an achievable goal and fill up this unassigned spendable so that we have that cushion there. And then we can start looking at the different baskets that are proposed. That's what I would like to see. Something simple that's easy to follow that we can set a goal for and actually achieve.
Look, I've got no problem doing the disaster recovery, especially with the capital reserve, just like you did that plan. I just want to make sure. I mean, it looks like to me when you read this, this is something you're going to commit to. Not just a goal, it's a promise.
Well, yeah, but can you? That's the bigger thing. Can you legally bind future councils to this document? I don't think you can. So, I mean, it's a goal. It really is. We can call it whatever we want, but it's a goal.
It's a goal with some
planning. That's a plan. I think that's a great idea. It's a good plan.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It gets a good plan. Tell me about the non-expendable for giving half of it.
We're going to get into that now.
And we had a couple questions about that because this is all, right?
Yeah.
We're going from one item to the next. As I just wanted to see here questions that were submitted for the meeting. It says the reserve policy should not require any increase in taxes to be accomplished. That's true. Reserve policy has nothing to do with the tax rate in the past or currently or in the future. Again, it says, please explain again why the sewer fund balance money was borrowed from the general fund and whose decision it was to do this over 4 years. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's the item that we're going to discuss right now, but to answer this question, the sewer fund balance did not happen over 4 years. It just happened that the fund was operating at a loss, and to balance the fund and to close it at the end of the year, we had to transfer the money to cover the expenses. But it did not happen over 4 years. It's much longer time.
I'd say probably somewhere between 8 and 10, something like that.
Right.
Yeah, that's when we had the major upgrade to the system. Okay, so then, and this is something I think we're getting ready to go through. What would happen if the sewer fund balance was borrowed from the general fund, wasn't paid back, and was forgiven in full? It was obviously a bad decision. Well, someone's part continuously borrowing without any plan to return the money, so why now? Okay, so first of all, that's why we're having a discussion now, so
right.
We can have a policy when these emergencies happen and things are much a bigger problem or expense than we were told they'd be, then the idea here is to have a policy on how much after we borrow from the general fund, how much of it has to be paid back and how much can be written off because it's money clearly the town is.
Well, the write-off, Mayor, just to add to that, I'm not going to sit here and make
and say that, you know, writing off zero or writing off half or writing off all of it, what's the best idea? Because I don't have the best idea. The approach Natalie and I took on this, you got $3.4 million Me Too monies to go back, okay? Honestly, is that something that's attainable? Okay? So, you know, the logic that went into this, from my perspective anyway, try to do something that's attainable. Establish that policy and make it happen and replenish the general fund. The reality on something is that the sewer fund can't operate with a profit. Okay? So the good news, real quick, we finished out FY20, and if you take a look at that, what I just gave you, and you take a look at FY20, the sewer fund, there was zero money went from the general fund to the sewer fund. That's good. So the good news is, was it a fluke? I hope not. Projection wise, it doesn't seem to be. But the good news is that the sewer fund's operating in the black. But what's not there is, what do we do if the sewer plant goes to put tomorrow?
Or a realistic problem is, what do we do if the sewer fund needs to be expanded?
That's right.
So what do we do?
I'm asking the question.
My understanding is, hopefully, that's what Jean Holloway is going to tell us.
Yeah, but we can't be naive to think that she's going to have a solution.
Any more money you're going to have to spend is going to have to come from somewhere.
But I also want to share, and again, this goes back, predates me by a number of years, back in the early 2000s when the idea was to expand the sewer plant. We're getting off track here with this, but I think it's something good to get out. That, I think it was URS was the organization that came back and said to the town, you need a realistic number to support all the infrastructure upgrades. You need to sell X amount of EDUs. Okay? Whether that's was a good number or not, I don't know. But I can tell you, looking back, it wasn't a good number. But also what happened, we had years where we were plugging along, hitting those numbers, then we had years where you weren't hitting those numbers at all. So I look at this as a bright thing. This year here, we're gonna hit some serious EDU numbers, I can tell you that.
And the difference was, we raised the sewer and water rates so that it would cover the operations side. Based on the projections we were given. We didn't raise them just for fun, but that's what the adjustment. And ideally, if we'd known they needed been raised earlier, we could have done it three or four years ago.
But tell me now. Now the sewer fund is self-sustained.
Operationally.
Self-sustained. What is it going to do today? Meaning that good situation. When we ask them to pay this $1.7 million, when we put them on a schedule to pay this $7.1 million, are we going to have to increase those rates again to pay ourselves?
That's not the plan. The plan is to reduce that note and have a schedule to repay, let's say, $150,000 a year back to the general fund so we can basically commit this money or assign the money on the general fund as a repayment back and start building a little stronger reserve for the general fund. At the same time, the study that we're going forward with to look what is the capital needs and what the capital improvement will, the wastewater plant will need in 5 to 10 years. So then we can build something separate as a capital item for the fee for. It's not going to be an increase in fee to operate to have money back to general fund. We're talking about the situation as of right now, as is, it's operated already.
As of right now.
We figure this year, if the plan goes as is with the 21 budget, $150,000 is going back. Okay? So if we go.
Going back to the
general fund.
I think. Don't take for granted everybody knows what back and forth. Mm-hmm.
So if you have at the same year this year, there's another $150,000.
But to Dean's point, is we're using that money to pay ourselves back. Therefore, when we were presented the report with adjusting the rate, that was just to offset operational costs, which you've mentioned. But it does not take into consideration the capital expenditures and the capital improvements that need to be done. So I think where you may have been going is that if we're paying ourselves back, that am I right?
Yeah,
if we're paying ourselves back at a rate of, let's just use $100,000, could that money be better served in investing in the capital things that truly need to be addressed?
And just writing it off.
I think that's what we're going with.
And that's what the discussion tonight is about, is what philosophy, what strategy we want to use about the money we owe to ourselves. So I'm not talking about individual, but what the utility funds, in this case, the sewer fund, owes significant money to the general fund. The utilities are supposed to be self-sufficient. And when they aren't, then they have to be subsidized temporarily. And then we go back to adjust the rates, get everything back in line, and then we go forward. And that's what tonight's critical decision will be. And there isn't any like one strategy. Every town has to do, and every municipality, every county has to do what they think is right in their particular financial circumstances. So glad to point that out, because that's a decision that's before us.
And in our case, if you took the whole 3.7 and wrote the whole thing off, the only thing it does is, right, if you just reduce the balance sheet.
It's 3.4, right?
3.4. It just takes the balance sheet down that much money.
Yes, it makes you general fund balance or your reserve down to nothing. And then the question comes, how are you going to sustain that 3 months of reserve policy that we're trying to move forward as advisable on the general fund? So, yes, there is a decision to write completely off, or there is a decision to write half of it, or 1.7, as I proposed it in the memo, just to take a good number and have an attainable goal for sewer fund to repay that, because sewer fund did borrow. Sewer fund is enterprise fund. It's operated as a business. It can make profit. Non-for-profit is our general fund. So the sewer fund borrowed money for operational capital and et cetera expenses over 10 years. I think just writing it off and move forward is great, but I think better off is having the scheduled repayment, so then we can look at proposed structure of general fund and assign that 100 or 150 would be available and assigned to something on the general fund as a repayment. Yes, we're paying back ourselves. Yes, we're doing this, but in the same time, the borrowing happened. And
is it realistic to pay it back or not? I'd say right now, probably not. I mean, wait, you've proposed it, it looks like you can pay back. But I mean, it's not bad news, but that money or theirs and turn back to general fund.
Do you have a payment plan that
I simply have a half of it written off and the rest is assigned to 10 years interfund loan that payable back to general fund.
So again, a lot of this is where do we go from here? And so, obviously now that the finance director has made a proposal, but working closely with the town administrator to basically certainly write off half, and again, it's been discussed to write off, or somewhere in between those. It's another possibility. And there again, I think in trying to balance all these different needs is that, it's kind of like, it's what kind of balance sheet do you want to end up at the end of the year with? Because either way, we have to meet our obligations. And we are meeting our obligations. That's true.
PKS, what's their thought on all this?
The advice last year, audited financial statements, and our management letter was to make a decision whether to reduce the balance or to write it off.
It reads.
But that wasn't just
last year, the year before.
It
says, management should determine the amount of the interfund loans that the town has the intention and ability to
to repay to the general fund. Any amounts that do not meet the criteria should be written off. Mm-hmm. Period.
Another question that I have, in this memo it says, the sewer fund balance is page 2, number 5, sewer fund balance due to the general fund as of June 30th, 2019 is $3.4 million. And then the information that we were given tonight just says current, it says non-spendable due from other funds, $3,431,000. So what money was borrowed by other funds?
Somewhere.
And what amount is that? Is that $31,000?
Yes, we have a transfer scheduled for $50,000 from somewhere. So that's,
but
this
that
is
happens
just as of audited numbers. Right. This specific memo talks just to a fund.
And I think you talked about this a little bit when we were going over the reserve policy. But in a given year, if an enterprise fund ends up in a red, what happens?
We have to balance the fund. We can't close it on rep, so we borrow from general fund, or we would borrow from another enterprise fund except electric.
And how is that done?
Through the inter-fund transfer, which is what we have right now. Sewer fund owes general fund in the transfer 3.4.
So is that a budgeted item?
It is a ended financial statement reserve balance or fund balance amount. It's not budgeted amount.
So who authorized?
Well, how would you close your checking account if you have so much operating expenses and you don't have much revenues coming up? It's inter-fund, but it's all living together. It's not authorization needed. You have to close the fund to balance at the end of the year to create audited financial statements.
So if a fund were to end up in the red, say $50,000 at the end of the year, who would authorize the money to go from? I know it's within the same fund.
It's governmental account.
Right.
You have one centralized balance, and so each fund is armed. If one is lacking, it helps from the top, but the top is what we have as a main bucket.
But what I'm asking is,
I think what you're asking, if I may, for FY21 budget, how much money is going back?
We've budgeted a transfer from sewer fund to general fund of 100,000. $100,000 and $50,000 from stormwater to general fund.
And you approve that in the budget?
In the budget.
That's right.
But what I'm asking you, at the end of the year, when the account needs to be closed out and it's in the red, however much money, and we need to make that up, who authorizes that amount?
It's an audited financial statement. We closed the year for government. It's always been, it's not an authorization form or a decision-making form. You close in the year for the whole town.
Okay, so let's go to the sewer fund. Because I've really tried to understand this, and I can't figure out. I have some questions. And what I'm wondering is, so we get a budget that is presented, we work through it together, and if at the end of the year those numbers are not balanced, right?
Okay.
In the red would be unbalanced.
Okay.
How does that get made up? And that's what I'm trying to figure out.
If I understand you, that it's always been, and again, because it's something we've learned together, is that on the last day of the fiscal year,
mm-hmm.
June 30th, that if there is an amount owed by a utility fund, then automatically there is an entry, an accounting entry that covers that from the general fund, and that's how it happens, and it happens on the last day of the
year. Pretty much, yes.
And it's not something we can either authorize it or unauthorize it.
Right.
And that's how part of it is part of the reason.
Right, but
the same thing happens with revenues. We've predicted we are projecting to collect X amount of dollars in revenues, and then something happens, and we don't collect those revenues. So expenses are within the lines, but your revenues did not come in, so we're still in the red. It's not just expenses.
there a way to tell what the money was used for? Like, what it offset?
For the sewer fund?
Yeah, for the $3.4 million. Could we see what led to the red for those funds, for those fund years?
It would be a combination of not enough revenues collected to operate and capital unpredicted expenditures.
No, I think on the capital side, I'm thinking, and just correct me if I'm wrong, that the expenses related to the new spray irrigation, creation of it, the setup of it, was significantly greater than what we were told it would be, and the rates that we were told or recommended by the URS study were not sufficient cover the operation cost. So it's two things happening at once.
Okay.
And that's why they didn't show up at the same time, because one was slow and the other, the operations, they brought them way down, but they still were higher than anything they originally projected. When we authorized the wastewater spray irrigation expansion.
So the part that really led to my confusion was, I looked down at the piece of paper and I said, all right, what decisions did I make that led to the borrowing while I was in the chair of 2018's numbers of $612,000 and some change and 2017 of $859,000? So I went back and tried to figure out at what time were those decisions brought before the mayor and council. And I couldn't figure it out. And I tried to look at the budget, and I tried to figure out where these numbers were presented as something that we were in the red for, or something that we were doing that was incorrect, and I couldn't find it. It doesn't mean that it's not there. I just couldn't find it. So what I'm asking is, can we figure out at what time those numbers were presented to the mayor and council for
each
us to
year,
make a decision?
It's here when the auditor financial statements.
But that's after the
fact.
That's
retro. When I was working, I had to maintain a budget. I did not have the flexibility of getting to the end of the year and writing stuff off. So that means I had to monitor and project where I was going to be at the end of the year. If I was projecting a deficit, I had to change my operation. I had to change my operation to compensate for that deficit. During the year, if we are projecting a deficit, what do we do to try to mitigate that and not having to borrow from a tree or whatever it's called at the end of the year? Or do we just let it go on with the expectation that at the end we'll get it from the general fund?
Well, I know the last 2 years, to answer your question, capital has been pretty much non-existent. There's been a lot of needs, wants, I should say wants, on the once it hadn't happened.
Yeah.
The needs, the bare basic needs of that. And so I can tell you that over the 10 years that I know I've been here, the amount that we've spent the last couple of years for capital has been significantly less. But that's got to stop at some point, too.
Let me ask you, but when you strike a budget, it is the expectation that you live within that budget.
Mm-hmm.
And you as the manager or the director have the authority to do what you need to do within your budget to get to the end. And if that's changing operation, if that's cutting back on whatever, I think that's what needs to happen instead of having an expectation of getting to the end and being compensated by the general fund.
And this is the last 2 years, the first 2 years we've been notified. again, looking at this year, because that step never happened. Never happened. I mean, otherwise we would have probably all of us going, what? But it's one of those things that now, establishing a policy, I think, and we need to make that part of it, is that projections for where we'll be, we need to know during the budget process. And quite frankly, the first we would hear about anything would be the audit, which is usually, you know, October at the earliest, or usually mm-hmm. November, which is, you know, well past a quarter into the new year. So I think that has to change. It's something that, you know, it's always done that way, but is there a way that we can...
Well, in fairness for a second, I'm not here... I'm going to say what's on my mind. If you take a look at page 2 of this sewer fund balance borrowed, okay, I think we all know, it's pretty clear that as of June 30th, 2019, the new due money that they needed to go back is at $3.4 million. If you go all the way back to 2015, it was 1.7. So, I mean, this me too money went well beyond 2015. So, from my world, if I were sitting here, again, this is not directed at any of you all, but from my world, if I were sitting here in 2015, and we know that we got to tap into $500,000, and it happened in 2015. 2014, 2013. I'm mind boggled as to why it wouldn't stop. Do you know what I mean? Instead of allowing it to happen year after year.
Because it was never,
right.
It was never brought up during any budget process at all. If the sewer fund was underperforming, we could have simply changed the sewer rates 5-6 years ago. But
you look right here, not because
now
it's a blank.
But let me say that I'm more concerned and we need that history. But we're here now.
That's right.
We're here now. How we got here is important, but it's not worth dwelling on. What needs to be dwelled on is how do we go forward and do better. This is what I would like to discuss. I think what you have presented is food for thought, and I think it's going to put us going in the right direction. But it is not the all. It is not the all. Yes, we need these policies and procedures and this understanding of this plan going forward. But we also need an operational part of that that's gonna support this. So if we're gonna have a plan, it needs to be a complete plan with these policies in place and this look toward the future. But it's gonna take day-to-day operations to get us there.
Well, one difference, though, is that we just started having these quarterly reports from the finance department after we discovered that, you know, we have a constant deficit in the sewer fund going against the general fund. To me, it seems like two decisions. One, I agree with everything said, but one of the things that we would not put aside tonight, but to go back and think about is with the debt that has accumulated over time against the reserves of the general fund, how much of that should be written off? It's something we should do right now. I think everybody needs to sleep on it, talk about it, mm-hmm. ask questions from Jeff, each other, all of us, and Natalie. But basically, that's a one-time decision. We fight, figure out what we feel is the appropriate thing to do. And then the second part is to make sure that as part of the quarterly reports that we get, that projection of our reserves being, you know, being built up by any of these funds against the general fund that are in any way out of line, better or worse than what was budgeted. And I think that's an element that never, ever existed ever in the operations of the town. And this is a great opportunity to remedy that. And I think we started, again, a year and a half, dozens of years ago.
Everything you have is a draft.
Yeah. And I think that's when we started to get these quarterly reports and when we were able to make the decisions that have stopped the bleeding. And now we want to say, okay, we stabilize the situation. Where do we want to go from here? That's just, I guess, the best way to summer. And I don't think we're going to do it in one night, that's for sure.
One of the recommendations is the 3 month operational capital. Can you put a dollar? Is there a dollar figure placed on that?
3 months reserve. What's
it? It's on a proposed. We want to
know. What is that about?
3 months of general fund as of right now is 1,500,000.
That's 3 months.
There it is.
But for that benchmark, shouldn't we use like a running average, like a 3 year historical average? So each year you would take your following 2 years and average those numbers, and that should really be our benchmark. So it allows for fluctuations and you don't get large swings. Do you agree?
General fund is pretty much, we don't have an increase or decrease on a big swing. It's 2 to 3% whether it's going down and up. So we can, but it won't change much over 1.5. It will be thousands.
So if we were to write instead of 1.7, we'd go with 3.4.
Okay.
And then we take the amount of money we're going to pay back to the general fund and we keep sticking to the reserve account for the sewer fund. Kind of accomplishes the same thing, right?
You're talking about leaving the full amount and not writing anything?
Writing the whole thing off.
Writing the whole thing off.
And the money you would pay back to the general fund every year?
Yes.
Stick in the reserve account and keep it in the reserve fund.
Well, the one, yeah, I guess it would be.
So you didn't read out the loan from sewer fund, mm-hmm. and then you're just going to create a transfer. It would have to be some sort of a policy in place that we can adhere to. The same thing, what I'm trying to do.
If you're doing the same thing,
the balance
sheet's going to have the same spot. Even if you say you spent $1.7 million, you didn't ever get paid back. We did the same for, I don't know if all the council and the electric company did the same thing. Got way in the hole, spent. The expenses were way more than the revenue thought. The rates didn't get adjusted properly for whatever reason, and then they wrote the whole thing off. I think it was only like $600,000, $700,000.
It wasn't much, but it never got repaid.
Exactly, and we all voted.
And that's why I'm advocating for that specific repayment plan, so we can stick to it. We have a clear picture, and if we can transfer more 1 year or less and transfer a second year, that's great, but we still have that plan that we're going to follow mm-hmm. and commit to it. That's all that memo is.
Well, I think the amount that gets written off has to be whatever the majority of the council decides.
Yeah, that's right. And with the pluses and minuses of doing the whole thing.
Because
there may be a downside.
Money we owe to ourselves. We're not in some sort of financial crisis.
No,
that's one thing that people need to understand for all of us, is that what we are trying to do is come up with a policy so that we can predict, as we do each budget, what the reserves will look like at the end of the year and not find out in the audit months later.
I think the quarterly reports we've been getting have been, I mean, fantastic. You can keep us up to date of, hey, we're doing okay. All the changes you all made that were pretty painful work. Now, next 10 years, what's that going to be? But today, I understand what you're trying to get today and follow the directions of our third-party accounting doing something. Now.
So the reserve policy, going back to, yes, I'm repeating myself, it's not something that's going to happen overnight, but it's something we need to move forward. And some of it we already have in place, which is great, but we just need to start working on making it a those transfers to help achieve that reserve policy. That's the overall picture that I'm trying to present.
I'm going to say, understood. The reason I don't think that's going to work is that would be fine if we went back and said, we're never going to increase the capacity of our wastewater system.
That's true.
And we were in that situation for a quarter. We were in that situation a quarter century, and it stifled this town. Because that one thing, no growth was not possible, even if it was greatly needed. And I think what we need to do is come up with a policy and a projection. What is, because when we upgraded the wastewater treatment plant, I'm not talking about spray irrigation, it was done so that it could be expanded at much less cost than if we just done it as cheap as possible. But it's still going to be significant dollars, and we need to have a plan that will support that. The past is the past, but we need to make sure that as we move forward and we meet the needs of the future, that we can do it without getting in a financial bind.
So you cut me off because I said the second step would be to actually work on a sewer plant and have the study done and see the 5 and 10 years projections. And yes, of course, we will be looking into the expansion. And potentially, I heard a conversation, need another water tower or something like that. So it's all in the works. But you have to have steps and plan and policy and procedures internally that you have to follow. But just saying, let's forgive the whole amount and just move on and see how we go, that's not going to work. That's what we're trying to do.
I think you're saying so far. Basically, we want to figure out what is a reasonable amount to pay back. And I think at least some members rarely think that half is too much. Obviously, writing off something that's, you know, makes sense, obviously. But what is the right amount? And I think that's what everybody needs to have some time to think about. Ask questions in between, and you know, we'll put this back on the agenda for 2 weeks, and we'll see where we are then.
I also want to share. I mean, our intent tonight, again, to me, I'm going to speak personally. When I sat with Natalie a while back, and I asked the question, "Where's the money?" I mean, this was an eye opener to me. Okay, and I think it was to you all as well. We ain't broke. I want you to know that. Okay, we ain't broke, but I think we can do something a little bit differently. And what I also want to share for FY21, again, this is I call it a best guess, but between now and June 30, 2021, we're on target this year to sell in excess of 200 EDUs. That's $3.3 million. So,
which we will not stay around forever, because EDUs are there to offset the cost the town incurs related to growth.
That's right.
So that money will be used strategically based on where the growth goes and where, you know, and where it happens.
Now, I keep hearing we're not broke. And I know we're not broke. But all we really have, if an issue that's not budgeted came up,
that's true.
All we really have is $16,000. Let me finish. Hold on. All we have is $16,000 without going into things that are already committed. And that is factual.
That's factual.
So that's somewhat scary to me. And I think that having 3 months in that bucket for things that might come up that need to be acted on is wise.
I think we'll agree with that.
I know, but I keep hearing that we're not broke, but we're not in as good of a financial position as we need to be.
Well, we're not broke.
I agree.
I think we're all in agreement there. That right. We're trying to decide what should the amount be and what should be, you know, basically the decisions, and I don't think it can be made in one night, but I do think we can't put it off indefinitely now that we have the facts. I do think we have the each determined. What do we think is the prudent and responsible levels to accomplish?
And what I would also like to see, and Councilmember Purnell mentioned it, that this has happened before with the electric fund, a lot less of a write-off, but still happened before. So I think in this process, we also need to know what it's going to take to put things in place so that we can have early identification of borrowing before it actually occurs.
Yeah.
Because Jeff hit a really good point. And when I saw this document, I had the same question that you did. What led to these numbers? And I went back to the budget, And I think that the descriptions were not as good as what would have led to a different outcome. So when I say that, in 2017's budget, 2018's budget, accounting, you look at the last four numbers of the budget, and it said prior year surplus for 3871, the final four numbers. It wasn't until 2019 that that budget code changed to say contribution from reserve. And having those descriptors would have led to a very different outcome, I believe.
And you know what? I insisted that be changed because I think that was very misleading for many years, and it was misleading for whatever purpose, and it had to go. And I think it accurately describes that. And I said this way, I have my own beliefs about why that was never changed, and it preceded all of us by many years.
May I interrupt real quick? I don't want to get into accounting 101 because I intended that. I don't want to do it again. Okay? But part of the intention 6 months ago to bring you all to the table was part of this reason right here. Okay? Your questions that you, the ones that attended, you know what I'm talking about. The questions you asked, I think got answered. But the questions you asked, I will tell you point blank, taught me a lot. Because if you're confused, you make me confused, and I want to be unconfused. So I think it was a win-win. We're going to do it again.
But I did think that was a misnomer and a misleading identification had been in this budget, in the town budgets for many, many years.
That was the first question I asked. The first budget that I saw, I said, what does surplus mean? And I know what surplus means in my household.
Yeah.
But I wanted to know what surplus meant here. And I was told it's the difference between revenues and expenditures. But that's not true, in essence.
Because I'm sorry, but I have to just say something. So on the presentations of the budget, when an approved transfer from reserve to cover the capital expense, or in my presentations over the past times, over the past 6-7 years, I guess, something was not clear. Why the question was not clearly brought up and say, hey, Natalie, what is exactly this point? When you're discussing the transfer from reserves and it's getting quoted to the surplus, and we don't understand the word surplus, then it should have been asked. And it was asked in the past, and it was changed, so we're moving forward. But we're kind of like really off the subject. This is just wording on the budget. Those transfers were discussed, approved, committed, and spent on the items in the budget that were really necessary and needed.
And I hear what you're saying.
It wasn't misleading. It wasn't something hiding under the description.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that we're in a discussion about writing $1.7 million off. And saying
it has nothing to do with the surplus and transfers from particular reserve that we're talking about right now in a particular moment. The surplus has nothing to do with the sewer that we're talking about writing off. The sewer balance was carried by closing the years, and the sewer was operating in the loss. It's two different items we're talking about, totally different items. The authorized and budgeted, approved on the budget transfers were discussed during the budget. The sewer balance owing back the general fund, it's just totally different.
Okay, but I'm struggling to see that because when we're presented with $1.7 million to write off, and I go back to try and figure out what decisions were made that led to that borrowing in the first place, and I struggle to locate them, how do I answer that question?
Okay, how can I help you to answer this question? And the question was asked, how did it happen? It happened over the past many years of sewer plant operating not at the property.
Right, but what I'm saying is that I sat up there in 2017 and asked the question about surplus. I was given the answer that there's a difference between revenues and expenses.
Mr. Tindall, this has nothing to do with
but
the
sewer.
But
that's what I'm trying to clarify where I'm seeing the two as the same. So then when I see that code as a surplus, how does it get into the surplus category? And then how does surplus change to borrowed from general fund? That's what I want to figure out.
You mix in two things together, they're not mixable.
But they're the same budget. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
They're not.
They're not mixable.
Okay. I do see it differently.
Can we discuss that another time and explain the difference that way, maybe? I mean, it's just,
okay.
We can do that. It's just, we're talking about two different things.
So are we in agreement that, at this point, that we want this on the agenda for the next time? Meantime, ask Jeff, Natalie, whatever questions or background information or throw out ideas and bounce them against the financial wall. And then when we come back, let's see if we're, you know, have at least a fairly common agreement about what we need to make these decisions. So we have a policy in place, not just for the next year, but for going forward for many, many years. I think I wish all this had been done years ago, but it never has. So it's time. You know, we have to make these decisions. We will. There's nothing enjoyable about any of it. So I think it's we all agree. We'd like to do. So just give it some thought, and let's think about it, and certainly ask any of these folks whatever you need to know.
First question.
When Jim Holloway wants
to should we, I did say soon. I'm going to go on the limb and say within 30 days.
Yeah.
She's in a very bad schedule because of COVID. She was unable to travel to places and complete stuff that she's supposed to be on the schedule. So it's not just us. Everybody is on hold because of that.
Well, just do your best to say, Jeff, whatever. You cut over the day. Our time, we're into a time when we need that guidance. And she knows she's going to be a great asset to provide us information. So we can't make certain decisions if we don't have the dollars and cents that she has researched and related to our utility fees. So again, can you call correctly? Sewer? Stormwater?
Yes.
Yeah.
Water and sewer, potentially looking into stormwater, but just kind of talk about fiscal 21 budget. We still have a whole year to discuss that. It's not near we're going to make a decision and increase or decrease the rates. It's just going to
help. Obviously, the sooner,
right.
The better.
Okay. Since she gets through the job, that will ask you to discuss.
Thank you. All right.
Jeff, here you go. All of the information you have presented us with, can you send an email to the little chart and all
for you, yes.
because I'm not checking this paper.
So I understand.
So
I'm glad you are.
And we all agree we want to agenda item six is discussion relative to the community parks and playgrounds grant application. And Mary, are you going to walk us through this? And this is for the application for the next fiscal year?
Correct.
Okay.
And to give a little background, several meetings ago, I informed you that our last application for community parks and playgrounds, which was for lighting at Henry Park basketball courts, was not awarded. And at that time, we had a very brief discussion about the basketball court lighting project versus the student park permanent restrooms, essentially. I followed up with the liaison that we deal with the Department of Natural Resources, Community Parks and Playgrounds program, it's a lot of words, and she indicated that while the applications themselves have been fine, the projects that we're submitting are just not what they are prioritizing at this time. They're prioritizing new development geared toward recreation, playgrounds, fun stuff. While the lighting project I would certainly consider to be fine. fund stuff, it didn't meet their, it's not to say that it doesn't meet their criteria, but it's not a priority. It's what they consider an enhancement to existing projects versus a new project. The restrooms, she flat out said, the restrooms just are not a priority. So at this point,
And
they are for everybody else, but they're also not fun projects. So at this point, the decision that the town needs to make is, do we keep submitting these applications? And there's nothing to say that the next one might not be the winner, might not be the one that they decide to cut. Or do we backtrack and kind of refocus our energy?
Am I correct or incorrect that we get submitted for the applications for the lighting and so the questions? But how many years in a row?
We've submitted for the lighting. I'm not going to say in a row, but at least twice.
Okay.
We submitted for the Stephen Decatur Park restrooms at least once. Okay. So that's a total of 3 years of applications.
To the best of your knowledge, you know, obviously you're the liaison and coordinator of the Parks Commission. Are there other needs that may that be more likely to be funded by the state that our parks could be enhanced by? I mean, because I know we've been working on these for some time, but if they're not happening, is there something else we can do?
I would say there is nothing that we are ready to move forward with right now. There are other ideas in the hopper, so to speak, but nothing that has been developed to the point where we can put together an application for 3 weeks from now.
Okay. Now, it's the deadline. It's the deadline for the next application 3 weeks from now.
Yes. Yes.
So if there's nothing in the hopper, we are presented with what do we reapply for?
What do we reapply for, or do we not apply this year and spend the next year developing a more viable project?
So, my question is, why can't we reapply and also develop?
Certainly.
For next year?
Of course we can.
And I would recommend that we reapply for the restrooms.
For the restrooms.
Regardless of what they feel is important, I would like to think that the town of Berlin feels that giving our children and our patrons of the park a permanent place to go to the bathroom is important to us.
Is that by consensus agreeable, or do we need a motion?
And we have that 10% match in the budget, right?
It wouldn't be necessary until the FY22 budget.
Okay. Wasn't there something in this year's for
$1,000?
Okay, just
about. Yeah.
All right.
So if I have your proposal, I move that we apply for the Stephen Decatur Park restroom.
Okay. I have a motion by Councilmember Burrell to apply this next, the current budget cycle for a grant for restrooms, permanent restrooms for Stephen Decatur Park. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. That's unanimous.
All right. Okay. I will bring that application to you at the next meeting.
Thank you. Mary, the next item on the agenda is a motion approving the waiver of fees and approval of park use for the Worcester County Tennis Clinic. And if you'll give us a little background on that, so the council can make an informed decision.
This is more or less the same application that they submitted in the spring, but then was canceled because of the pandemic. They really have just redone dates.
Do you need a motion for that?
Yes.
I make a motion that we award that same item to the Worcester County Tennis Clinic as before.
And we're basically going to waive the fees. It's the right standard fees, which are not that much. But okay, am I understanding the motion correctly? To waive the fees for park use by the Worcester County Tennis Clinic, and that summer?
September 15th. We'll have two clinics on September 15th and 22nd, and then start drop-in tennis on the Tuesday evenings, following that up until October 20th.
Okay, everybody, square away on the motion. All in favor of the motion by Councilmember Brittingham? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The record shows that the vote is 4-1.
Okay.
And now, next to number 8 on the agenda is the departmental reports by County Administrator Deputy.
Mayor and Council, real quick, from Economic Development, Ivy wanted me to share that she participated in the statewide Zoom meeting with the Maryland Department of Agriculture and other farmers, market managers. Life's Simple Pleasures is moving into the old PNC Bank. The Peach Ribbons around town for Peach Day in Berlin. Peach Day is Saturday, August the 8th from 10 to 3. Museum will have peaches for sale and live music. The shops and restaurants will have peach-themed sales and dining options. The logo on the town trash can, we had ordered, Ivy had got a grant, received a grant, the Main Street trash cans. I think we shared with you, they came in, the town emblem was a sticky, which they had, the manufacturer has said that we did not do what we should have done. So new trash cans are coming.
Manufacturer didn't do
that. Yes. And the sad thing is, it's the same manufacturer of the trash cans that we have throughout town, so one would think that what you do for one, you would do for all, but can't answer that question. And Ivy wanted me to share that she had a conversation with John Fager. The plan is still on their schedule anyway to have small town throwdown, which is scheduled for September the 12th from 1 to 6 p.m. So that's still on the
side.
Yes.
Again, what was the name of the business moving into PNC?
Life's Simple Pleasures.
What kind of stories?
I don't know.
Okay. That'll be interesting. That'll be
interesting.
But we'll all stay tuned.
Okay.
I do want to share that the electric utility has been, obviously with the heat, the loads have been heavy. They're doing a lot of peak shaving. All of you will receive an invite from Alvin Catt for a ribbon cutting ceremony on September 9th. At the time, it's still questionable, but department heads and elected officials will receive that. It will be a lunch, box lunch, nothing fancy, but a chance to see the new generator and the folks from Alvin Catt. They are looking at bringing some of their senior executives in from Alvin Catt.
And that's going to be our first diesel power.
That'd be our first natural gas.
Natural gas.
Yep.
Okay. So basically, offline the diesel generators and replace them with natural gas as we can afford.
Correct. And that generator is scheduled to be online in the next couple 3 weeks. From the planning department, two public hearings will be held during the August 10 mayor and council meeting to consider Planning Commission's unanimous motions to rezone 115 Broad Street from M1 Light Industrial to B2 Shopping District. That's the old Southern States. And also the former Carly Davidson property from B1 Town Center to B2 Shopping. So that'll be on the September 10th, or August 10th, agenda. And then the other big thing that's happening down, and we're probably 30% through process, and that's the resurfacing of streets. I've had a number of phone calls when I was on vacation. Two of them are sitting right here, worried to death about something that is going to be taken care of. The comments have been so far on the streets have been very positive. And what's been completed as of today, Harrison Avenue is about 80% complete. Chow Street is complete. Flower Street North is complete. The section of road in front of the Henry Park area, that's to be done in the next week or so. And then the striping on Flower Street needs to be completed. Also today, what was completed, we need to take a look at it. Take a ride to the plant, the wastewater plant, the
Bottle Branch is being completed as well. It's a whole river atmosphere out there. Tomorrow, Cape Circle and East Burley, and then in turn, there's a significant amount of concrete work that's going to be done on Walnut Hill, Commerce Street, pit adjacent to Blacksmith, and then also the 2 acres over at Henry Park. They both need to be replaced.
Jeff, why did they started on Larson?
No, we started on Harrison.
No. I'm just saying, they started on Larson last week. And they moved all their equipment to another location without finishing Flower Street. I was wondering what the reason was.
Well, the section that's in front of Henry Park, mm-hmm. that was an add-on. There are a number of potholes out there. And I know on the schedule that we had developed, I wanted the wastewater plant done. I wanted it done last week. I have a reason for that, for the operational end of what Jamie's got going on. So they'll be back to Flower.
So that portion down by Henry Park will be paved?
That's correct.
Okay. But then what is your projection? Because obviously things can change. How long do you think that'll be?
2 to 3 weeks.
2 to 3 weeks?
Well, those guys were out. I wasn't here last week, and I know they were. And I went out there today multiple times, and as hot as it is, all that hot asphalt, they're to be commended. I don't know how they
did. Oh, yeah, they did a good job.
Did the original proposal for Harrison Avenue go further than what it is?
No.
Because it makes those other potholes seem really bad right now.
I've heard about that.
There's a big difference between the county.
What'd you call it? Big Bridge?
Big Bridge.
From Big Bridge to where we take over the county, if you ride from Flower Street to the county or come up the other way, you can tell the difference as far as the surface, because the county is a little it's rough. It's a rough ride, and we got a smooth ride.
All the county did on that section of Flower, they did not do any paving at all. What they did, they sealed the road. Mm. Looks good.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have there.
Okay, thank
Larry,
you.
Do you have anything? Yeah. Natalie?
Yeah. All right, I don't have anything. Any comments from council?
I've got 2 things. First, when they include permits against the weekly report, can you categorize as to what the report, what the permits are for?
Residential or?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. And I'm going to ask you to do me a favor.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Can you thank Ivan for the 25-foot boat that I just noticed this morning all week.
She's watching right now.
I saw that this morning for the first time. I don't know where I've been or how long it's been there, but it really cheered me up when I saw that banner that talked about a 25-foot hose.
Were all these?
It made me smile.
Good.
Yep. It was really a good feeling I got this morning. So, that's all I had.
Anyone else have any questions?
Just a little.